Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Today is Tuesday, which means we have the Blueprint Power Hour with Coach Rob Regish, where we answer your questions, and no question is off topic, no matter how ridiculous it may be. We will address it here on the show. Before we get started, we have to thank our title sponsor. People are loving our title sponsor, Legendary Foods, the makers of the Tasty Pastry. You notice I'm not wheezing? I stopped vaping. I switched to edibles. Anyway, their red velvet tasty pastry is out of this world, and I really mean that. It's possibly the most delicious, healthy, high-protein, low-sugar snack you'll ever eat. It's not burdened and loaded down with fiber. It tastes amazing. It is fast, replacing protein bars, and I tell you that with all honesty. 20 grams of high-quality protein, 5 or less net carbs, the various flavors, and, of course, less than 1 gram of sugar. Go to shrnetwork.biz/legendary. Use the code SHR10 to buy yours today. And you can win a box of Tasty Pastry on today's show. Listen for the secret word during the commercial break. Email it to onair@superhumanradio.net. You are entered to win, and we're giving away more than one box a day. So your chances are good. So check it out. Without further delay, let's bring my buddy Rob on and play his music. There we go.
Calling all Blueprint Army. Fall in line. It's time for the Blueprint Power Hour with Coach Rob Regish on the Superhuman Radio Network.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good. What's going on? You got gremlins in the studio today?
Late start, you mean?
Yeah, well,
yeah, I do. Yeah, so my green screen fell apart today. One of the legs broke off of it, so I was fiddling with that before the show started, and I just couldn't get it to sit upright. I'm probably going to have to invest and buy a new one, but it's it's par for the course.
Right.
How you doing?
Well, the good news is my lower back is completely healed. The bad news is
my upper back hurts that, now.
it's moved to my middle back and it's locked up. But all things considered, that's a lot less debilitating, right? So I'm actually a happier man than I was a week ago.
Right, and it's not the continuation of the same problem. The lower back healed, but then you were moving furniture for your dad, and you kind of cramped your upper back.
Yep.
There you go. And one of the benefits of being strong is everyone asks you to help them move.
He really suckered me. He said, "Hey, I just need to move this one thing." And I get there, and it's the entire back porch. I mean, the whole damn thing. Get the grill out of the garage, bring it around. It wasn't one thing.
If it's not one thing, it's another, Rob.
You got it.
Anyway, so are there anything we need to talk about over at CoachRobRegish.com before we get on with the show?
No, there's nothing to pimp. I did want to thank everybody that came on board during the not only just the newsletter special, but also Synthogen and Adaptogen. And one of those two is sold out. I don't think it's Synthogen. But for everyone that patronized me and my products, thank you very much.
There you go.
Very much appreciated.
Okay, so let's move right to the first question. I'm trying to do a couple things at the same time here. The first question comes from Mike Demers. He says, does creatine need sugar for maximum absorption? At least that's what we were told when we were young. I seem to remember a product called Celltech. Yes, I bought it. That had a lot of it, meaning sugar. It did. It was more sugar than creatine in that jug.
Way more.
But they insisted it was necessary. If it does, can I just add sugar?
Yeah. So a lot of creatine questions lately. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if there's some new influx of marketing on creatine, but be that as it may, yeah. So we get to the question of sugar and creatine and insulin surge and how much is stored, et cetera, et cetera. It would be fair to say, I think, that an insulin surge would help more creatine get to the muscle cell or ultimately be stored there. However, as I've stated on prior shows, creatine is more so dependent, much more dependent, in fact, on salt, sodium, for transport across the muscle cell gradient into the center of the cell. So you've got two things there, right? And salt, though, is, in my mind anyway, much, much more important. I'm not sure if Celtec is still around. I really hope they're not. But early versions did, in fact, contain a whopping 75 grams of dextrose as part of the formula, okay? And that, its formulator said, was due to the fact that doctors were using 75 grams of sugar to evaluate insulin response and function in their patient populations. Now, that wasn't all Celtec was. They added what they said at the time was their secret weapon, 200 milligrams of alpha-lipoic acid, which was rather new at the time and expensive. Back to that in a second. The 75 grams of dextrose thing was true, at least at one point anyway. I don't, if it's still out there, whether it contains that cell, I don't know. But understand what the doctors were using it for and stuff. It had nothing to do really with creatine. Doctors were using it to, like I said, gauge that insulin response from their patients when evaluating people with diabetes, pre-diabetes.
It's actually called a glucose tolerance test. GTT, yeah. Doctors call it.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Now, back to alpha-lipoic acid, though, for a second. ALA does have research showing that when it's consumed alongside creatine, along with creatine, more creatine gets into the muscle, which, by the way, is why you see the R isomer of alpha-lipoic acid in Progenitrex, and it's generally the one that I recommend. However, I for sure don't recommend 75 grams of sugar with your creatine. If you think about it, honest to God, Celtec, they actually recommended this 4 times a day, which means you were getting a whopping 300 grams of sugar just from Celtec a day while you were loading your 20 grams.
Yeah, people were gaining weight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, about it. I mean, come on. You're getting fat.
Right. And so, you know, when it comes to this much sugar, look, you don't need to be a doctor, right, to know that that's unhealthy. So the question becomes, what should you do to get maximum amounts of creatine into the muscle? First things first, I'd take 5 grams a day, no more, maybe a little less even. But I would take that along with your highest carb and or calorie-based meal of the day. And I would lightly salt your food. Even a low-carb, and this is something people kind of overlook sometimes, even a low-carb meal, if there are enough calories in it, will elicit a rise in insulin. Now, it's not going to be this huge spike that you would see from carbs and an equal caloric load, which is going to be helpful, yes, in getting more creatine into the muscle. It hitches a ride with it, so to speak. The light salting basically seals the deal, at least in my mind. And most strength athletes could use more anyway. I've seen a lot of guys, you know, intentionally avoiding salt and really to their detriment. And the way we know that is I recommend they reintroduce it in their diet. And almost invariably they come back to me, oh, my God, I can't believe how much more stronger I was. You know, I feel better, et cetera, et cetera. Well, yeah, you're not dehydrated anymore. Now, there are several other ways to get more creatine into the muscle. Those are outside the context of this discussion, though. And truthfully, most people will do well, or at least well enough, with the recommendations that I just gave. Take it with food, Don't take more than 5 grams. Lightly salt that food.
So. Okay, so I'm going to give you a tip you've never heard anywhere on anybody else's podcast.
Okay.
In fact, you've never even heard anybody talk about it. About how to spike insulin without sugar.
Peanut butter.
Nope. Viagra. No.
Viagra, really?
So some of the early research on PDE5 inhibitors showed that over time, like taking 20 milligrams, 25 milligrams of Cialis every single day seemed to make patients somewhat insulin resistant. And when they looked into it, they found out that in the face of a meal, any meal, I mean, it could be steak, it could be, when insulin is normally produced, when a PDE5 inhibitor is introduced, the amplitude of the pulse of insulin is dramatically greater. Wow. And in fact, they looked at this from the standpoint of they could actually make a person who is diabetic, type 2 diabetes, get their pancreas to squeeze out more insulin after a meal if they were using a PDE5 inhibitor. Now, the problem with PDE5 inhibitors is if you take the long-acting ones, such as Cialis, the ones that tend to last 2 or 3 days at a time, and you take them every day, you do run the risk of actually becoming insulin resistant over time and having a lot of the same symptoms as people who have insulin resistance, which is visceral fat accumulation, higher probability of neurological diseases, heart problems, and so on. So a good friend of mine just messaged me a couple days ago, maybe a week ago, last week, and said, I'm thinking about starting to use a small dose of insulin post-workout. I said, don't. I said, take 50 milligrams of Viagra, because Viagra only lasts 5 hours. So you get this big pulse, boom, and then it's gone. You're not going to raise insulin all day long. You're going to raise it for that 5 hours. Take it post-workout. Take it post-workout. As you're leaving the gym, take your Viagra, because it's on an empty stomach, unless you're doing intra-workout meals, and which most people aren't. It's on an empty stomach. Take it when you leave the gym. If you got to take your peptide shots or whatever, take those. Wait about a half hour and then eat your meal, and you will produce a whole lot more insulin, a whole lot more insulin.
I tell you, sildenafil Viagra is really turning out to do a whole lot more, right, than help with erection quality.
Yeah, and plus your erections will be really great after you work out, too. There's that, too. But, yeah, I mean, you can actually get your body to produce a lot of insulin on demand by using. So I don't know who this is. Facebook user, your name is not coming through. L-arginine, highest insulinogenic amino acid, maybe, but it's definitely not going to perform as good as 50 milligrams of Viagra. I guarantee it. Just look at the studies. Whey protein will spike insulin. Not necessarily. Not everybody who takes whey protein gets that fast release that would demand insulin. Gluconeogenesis is a very expensive process for the liver, and it takes time to kick in. So, but anyway, leucine as well. I don't know who that is. Yeah, amino acids definitely do certain things, but not like Viagra. Read the research on Viagra and insulin production, and you will be convinced that you should be using it post-workout. Okay, next question comes from Lance Russell. Why is it some of these calisthenics masters don't have much muscle? Don't get me wrong. I'd love to be able to do some of those tricks they perform, but I want to at least look like I lift.
Yeah, well, the story is largely this. Any extra bulk that you're carrying, especially fat, works against you, right, when performing any sort of body weight move. Almost every single thing you can name, movement for body weight, is going to suffer if you're carrying around extra chub. And because of that, a lot of people have learned that the easiest way to accelerate your progress when using calisthenics is to cut weight, right? And so for most, that's the story. Bigger picture, though, it looks like this. There's no doubt in my mind calisthenics stimulate muscle growth. The evidence is, the historical evidence is there. And we know other people that have used only calisthenics built a lot of muscle with it. Building maximum levels of muscle, though, requires something else, in my opinion. And that something else is years of eating big. Yes, you're going to put on some fat in most cases, but no, you won't or shouldn't at least look fat, at least in the sense that, you know, Joe Q average looks fat. Most calisthenics masters skip the heavy eating. So if anything, they will deliberately opt to restrict food in many instances. But make no mistake, overeating itself, all by itself, without any resistance training, is a powerful stimulus for muscle growth. So years ago, there were studies done showing that simple overfeeding resulted in virtually all measures of anabolic hormones and everything else related to muscle building rise considerably. And take note, it's not like you're just shooting up with a bunch of tests, you know, to accelerate muscle growth. When you do it with food, and here's the key point, when you do it with food and you're young, all of the anabolic hormones and values rise together in the ratios and balance that Mother Nature intended. It makes for very efficient muscle building. I can honestly say, looking back, there was never a time, you know, other than the years between, let's say, 18 and 25, that I put on so much muscle so easily. Doesn't matter, you know, when creatine came along, pro hormones, all that stuff. None of that stuff ever really held a candle to it. So when you do it with food, all those hormones are in perfect concert with each other, so to speak. The other half of this is that some calisthenics movements, actually a lot of them, maybe most, have a skill level component to them that is higher than what you see in most weightlifting movements.
Right.
And like any other skill, those skills get better or worse with practice or no practice. So if you don't stay proficient in things, especially calisthenics-wise, that skill will erode. Conversely, generally speaking, the more you practice, the better you get. But here's the thing. For best results, I feel that the vast majority of people should be performing both body weight work and weights. It's not one or the other. Also, if you are young, then I would still build as much muscle as possible with weights between those ages of 15 and 25. After that, you will never have, you know, hormone levels that are more conducive to putting on muscle and fast. And once those years are gone, they're gone for good. So choose wisely. That's a discussion I'm having right now with my son and his friend. You know, they want to do all calisthenics, which, you know, I have no problem with that, but I need to make sure they understand what they're potentially giving up. So
yeah,
my two CCs up there.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at these guys that are really about functional strength, they don't carry a lot of muscle. Because it doesn't take a lot of muscle to do the things that you want to do functionally, unless you're moving furniture, that is.
Yes, right.
BJ Haynes. I'm thinking of doing my first cycle test only, as it, I call it reliable, as only as it's all I can reliably get. Sorry. So I'm 28, have more than a decade of training under my belt, and think I'm ready. Do you have any suggestions?
The first suggestion I would have is to evaluate why now. I think you need to answer the question, why now, right? Because this is obviously a landmark decision in most trainees' lives. Most guys, that decide to go down this road in their 20s do so mostly because newbie gains are long gone, okay, and they're not happy still with the way that they look. That's understandable, and there's some truth to that too. However, there is something that's right around the corner that you might be interested in because I feel that it'll probably impact your decision. Around age 35, I suddenly realized, you know, my physique looked way better than just a few years prior. And the best way I can put it to you is the muscles looked much denser, thicker, and more separated.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, the latter quality actually makes you look a lot leaner than you really are. And it took me by surprise. And I can honestly tell you that for the first time since I started lifting weights at age 15, at age 35, I finally saw something in the mirror that I was happy with looking back at me. Now, granted, I have body image disorder, but a lot of us do, okay? And I have seen over and over in other people that once they hit about age 35, they're actually peaking from an aesthetics and muscle maturity perspective anyway. I also want to caution you about starting to cycle in your 20s. This has nothing to do with health concerns, legalities, the black market, whatever. So what is it? It's your ability to father a child, your fertility. Because from what I've seen, a lot of guys start cycling, and that very quickly gives way to blasting and cruising, which can obviously result in a quite decrease in fertility. Yeah. I have more than one friend, let's say, who couldn't have kids because he had used a lot of stuff in his 20s, and he had even several that had gotten off the stuff for a while. They couldn't get their sperm levels to come back, and I got to tell you, it's hard to watch, but it's a real bummer when the girl that you've married or you want to marry desperately wants kids, right? Her biological clock is ticking. And you can't sire them. You can't, you know, fertilize her. It hurts you. It hurts her. It's a bad scene all around. I've seen marriages fall apart because of it, et cetera, et cetera. So what I would tell you is this. If you're really hell-bent on starting your anabolic adventures now, freeze some of your sperm. Just to be on the safe side.
Don't do it yourself in your freezer. Go to a clinic. Hey, honey, right. Help me fill up the ice tray. We're going to put it in the freezer and just in case. No, not like that.
Yeah, don't think you can save some money.
Well, when you said freeze some of your sperm, I'm thinking somebody's out there going to load up a plastic bag and throw it in the back of the freezer where that turkey breast that they never cooked is laying. Like, no, not that way. You got to go to a clinic.
Right. So having said all that, for those that are still wanting to proceed, I would tell you, Dan Duchesne, who was the original steroid guru, was very fond and forcefully recommended up to 1,000 milligrams a week for someone's first cycle, that being either, I think, cypionate or enanthate. His reasoning was that your receptors will never be as open and fresh and right receptive to all of that anabolic goodness as they will be on your first cycle. Now, there's something to that, obviously, although I'm not sure 1,000 milligrams a week is right for everyone. Just as a quick example, you know, think about the person that says, all right, I'm going to do 1,000 milligrams a week. I got my stuff. And oops, they've got gyno because they had it, you know, when they were younger, or they're just sensitive to, right, aromatizing to estrogen. If they have no Arimidex on hand or otherwise don't know what's going on, that could be a very expensive mistake because it's going to take surgery in most cases to get rid of it. That's just one example. Beyond that, though, I would tell you this. Put as much brain damage as you do into the drugs as you do into your training, your diet, and your sleep and stress levels. Make sure those are all in order. Get a second opinion about what you're going to do, because I've seen in many cases where the first cycle or more was squandered due to various inadequacies in those three areas. So dot your I's, cross your T's, make an intelligent, informed decision.
Yeah, too many people think they're going to be using gear so they can be more reckless and not work as hard or sleep as well, go out with their friends and drink because they're on a gram, 500 milligrams of testosterone and maybe some other assorted anabolics. But that's when you have to really do everything right. You don't sell your home, take all that money, and go to Vegas with it, right? You have to be more cautious with it, and it's the same thing. You have to be cautious because you're actually doing something that provides great reward if done right, but will be very disappointing if done wrong.
Right.
And you'll have wasted that opportunity. Absolutely.
Yep.
Next question comes from Mike Hegstrand. He says, hey, coach, do you recall a concept called carb backloading? Yeah, I had the author on my show. It was all the rage several years ago, but I don't hear much about it today. Is it worth looking into? The fact that you don't hear much about it today should tell you something.
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things that, yeah, you know, it may be worth exploring further. Although, if I recall, there was a book being sold for like $80 a book. And in some cases, that might be a great investment and might be worth, you know, everything, thousands to you later on. It might be cheaper now. I don't know. It's worth poking around, I guess, if you're interested in the concept. On the one hand, I don't think you should dismiss anything just out of hand. On the other hand, this seemed to be a kind of here today, gone tomorrow, you know, flash in the pan type thing. Now, to be absolutely fair, I never ordered the book. I can only read, research, and try so many things. You know, and believe me, I got a laundry list like this of stuff guys want to know about, right? And nobody's sending me $80 for the book. My understanding of the method was that by saving all your carbs for the end of the day, you could ingest them, you know, in one bolus dose and get all the benefits with none of the downsides, no fat gain, no water gain, et cetera, et cetera. One thing I recall vividly was that the approach had some real zealots pushing it. And it's difficult to discern if that's because of truly the results that they got, and they were that jazzed about it, the fact it was new and exciting, or simply the fact that people buy in 100% to something, and at that point it becomes gospel and they're spreading it. Or it could be a combination of those things. I think if carb backloading was the breakthrough that it purported to be, to your point, Carl, it'd be here with us today. We'd still be hearing about it, and it would be a lot more popular, such as low carb diets, intermittent fasting, or their variations. So, look, if there's anyone that wants to send me the book or otherwise give me enough information to try it, I'm certainly open to it. But for now, I would look in another direction for how, you know, your diet, or excuse me, carbs are to be addressed in your diet. There are a lot of different strategies out there, many good ones, many available, you know, for free. And it's a safe bet there's one among them that works for you. So that's my two cents.
We did the show about carb backloading in February of 2013 with John Kiefer. He's the guy who wrote the original book and promoted the original idea. And his original book and original idea were born from the fact that insulin sensitivity is diurnal, which means it's different in the day than it is in the evening. And based on that insulin sensitivity pattern, he postulated that eating all of your carbs at night, right before bed, in fact, would lead to greater muscle gains because of glycogen uptake, and no fat storage because of this insulin sensitivity phenomenon that varies in tissue from fat cells to muscle cells and so on. Well, a lot of people tried it, and a lot of people complained that first thing that happened was their sleep went to crap. They couldn't sleep. They fell asleep. They woke up. They fell asleep and woke up numerous times. Oh. Sorry about that. We're supposed to be going into a break, but let's just hold it off for a second. And so the diet fell apart because the people who tried it thought to themselves, this is horrible. I can't sleep. Who cares what kind of gains I can make? Looking back, now that we know that health is important to everybody, eating that much carbohydrates before bed is a horrible thing and probably will help you develop dementia faster if you're an older adult. It's just crazy. And again, no one does carb backloading. In fact, people that – there were a couple brothers at my gym that used to listen to the show, and they tried it, and they said they were getting strong, but they couldn't sleep. Their sleep had completely fallen apart, two twin brothers. And so for that reason, they had to stop doing it. So, you know, what do you do? We can't get GHB anymore to help you sleep. So you can carb backload and be in a coma. You know, it's not around for a reason. You don't hear about it anymore for a reason.
I remember people asking about it early. I didn't realize it was that many years ago, but it makes sense. And I think at the time, we both had the same opinion. You know, this probably is not a good thing. And that was when it was brand new. So, you know, the test of time, as I've said many times, is the big one. And I don't think it stood the test of time.
Anybody know who CBL is?
BBL.
Oh, carb backloading rationalizes scoffing junk food. No, it doesn't. They had you eating sweet potatoes and rice. It wasn't about junk food at all. But it was about having like some ridiculous like 500 grams or 600 grams of high-quality carbohydrates before bed. I have a feeling that this is Dr. George Tuliatos. We can't see his name for whatever reason. But anyway, yeah, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. It's not around for a reason. I think it's a bad idea from a health standpoint as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Getting a massage post-workout is a proven strategy to facilitate better recovery. Getting to massage therapists can be difficult and expensive, especially in these times. The solution is the Meteor, a heated massage ball from Milestorm. Reduce pain and soreness and expedite recovery with the Meteor's research-backed vibration settings and therapeutic heat. It's convenient for travel and works on any body part. Go to shrnetwork.biz/Meteor and use code SHR15 for 15% off and free shipping if you buy two or more. Start recovering better today. Telomere. Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at eatlegendary.com and Amazon. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's REDCON1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon 1 banner ad today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Folks, I'm pleased to announce that Pure Nootropics is now carrying the antioxidant alpha-lipoic acid in its bioidentical natural form as R-Ala. R-Ala provides protection in many areas and has even been shown to promote weight loss. Check out the interview I did on episode 2608 back in October to learn more. Our friends at Pure Nootropics have been bringing you great products and deals since 2013, and they have another one with R-Ala. Go to shrnetwork.biz/pure and use code SHR30 for a whopping 30% off. Level up. Go pure.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. So the next question comes from Al Perez. He says, training-wise, how long do you stick with a particular style? By that, I mean HIIT, West Side, 20-rep squats, etc. I find myself program hopping and looking for a way out. No sooner do I start something than I read about another method they say works better.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And it's a dynamic that seems, you know, to happen fairly regularly. In my opinion, this goes back to a few things, not the least of which is the individual and their quirks, so to speak. So, for example, someone with ADD, ADHD is going to suffer a lot more from program hopping, right, than someone without that condition. It's also, there seems to be a generational component to it. Like, for example, my son and his friends, they have no patience. If they don't experience immediate success with something, they're out of there. They're on to a different thing. Me, you know, being a Gen Xer, I'm much more likely to give something 6 weeks instead of 6 minutes. It also depends, though, on the program that you're using. So if you're using, for example, 20-rep breathing squats and pullovers, you're not going to have the gas to walk after that. Never mind do justice, you know, to some other method you want to mix it with. In all honesty, the best template, the best method I have found for people that are prone to program hopping is the original blueprint in its shell. Why is that? The answer is simple. You rotate through no less than 5 training methods in 8 to 10 weeks, the first 8 to 10 weeks, during your first blueprint run. And so, you know, think about it. Where else do you see? We use at least 5 different training methods that have stood the test of time insofar as the way that they've been woven together into that 8 to 10 week shell. So you are never, never far really from switching things up, and far from, you know, arbitrarily doing so. Each phase literally builds upon the last, and this is important, solidifies gains as permanent to finish the process. The best part of the whole thing is that it can be repeated over and over. And that's what really sets it apart from other training methods. Conventional programs don't use that technique. And I'm fairly certain I know why. It's because nobody can sell it, let's say, as their training method. Why? Because it's a combination of other people's methods. As an example, I borrowed liberally from foreign loading patterns, heavy duty, total tonnage, Bill Starr's 5x5, Staley's EDT, all of those to arrive at what I call a best and final recommendation. It works like nothing else due to two things. Number one, redundancy. If one thing it doesn't work, the next one will. Although all 5 have a very high success rate in the general population. The other thing is true synergy. And when you put those two things together, redundancy and synergy, you really start hitting on all cylinders. Things start to snowball. It's like a landslide. You give that up when you decide, I'm just going to use this one method, no matter what it is. No matter if it's heavy duty, you know, Chico, West Side, you know, every one of them suffers from that same flaw. So short of using something like the blueprint shell, it's on you to figure out what works via trial and error. And that is a long, expensive process, by the way. And there's no guarantee that you'll find the answer to what you're looking for. In fact, I can guarantee this. You're going to try a lot of methods that you get absolutely nowhere with, or worse, hurt you, get injured. Time is your most valuable resource, not money. It's not money. It's not energy. It's time. Think about that and make your move, because time stands still for nobody, right? And if you're not making the right moves training-wise, especially in your younger years, you'll never get that back. You never get it back. I spent almost 2 years in my early 30s experimenting with stuff that didn't work. Didn't work, overtrained me, undertrained me, whatever the case may be. And I got to tell you, I still lie awake at night angry about that and thinking about what could have been if I had just followed some tried and true protocol. It's like a lot of people that wake up at age 40 and say, oh boy, I got to start saving for retirement. They look back at what they could have been doing for 20 years and there's a lot of regret. Don't put yourself through that, please.
So we got a bunch of questions we got to answer. And also Aiden Ray said CellTech is still available. He posted a picture of the label.
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit?
He posted a picture of the label
of
CellTech. Aiden Ray says CellTech is still available. 38 grams of total carbohydrates.
Oh, they lowered it, thank God. So just to 38.
Yeah, 14 grams of sugar.
Oh.
There's B6, there's ascorbic acid, there's B12, there's a little magnesium, sodium and potassium. 5 grams of creatine monohydrate, taurine L-alanine, L-leucine, L-valine, L-isoleucine, alpha-lipoic acid, only 100 milligrams. In they recommend 2 scoops.
That's still
76,
a lot of...
76 grams of carbohydrates, 30 grams of sugar.
Oh. Well, I'm sure they have a population out there that just gets excited when they see the numbers on the scale go up. And I guess that'll do it.
I know it's not cheap either. You can buy maltodextrin as dextrose from Red Bud Farms or Red Bud Mills at any grocery store. It's like $2 for a pound of it. I mean, it's cheap stuff.
You remember weight gainers? That was the primary ingredient in weight gainers.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Robert Thompson wants to know our thoughts on metformin.
Weight loss, you want to go first or me?
Well, he says metformin for weight loss and hypertension. How about its effects on libido and testosterone? My blood glucose is controlled by diet and exercise. So we know now that metformin provides zero benefits for someone who's not already metabolically broken. If you're taking metformin and you're extremely metabolically flexible and you think it's going to do something special for you, it's not. And in fact, a study was just published last month that linked a higher rate of breast cancer to women taking metformin than women not taking metformin. That's not good. So something else is up. I think metformin is a waste of money. It's a waste of time. I really don't. And strength and hypertrophy. He says strength and hypertrophy on metformin. Zero. It's not gonna be a game changer at all. Not gonna do anything good for you. Unless you're already diabetic. Now if you're diabetic, it can help you.
Yeah. I mean my benchmark on these sorts of things is if you do not have a health condition that requires the use of a prescription drug, why use it? You know, there's no reason to do so. At least, you know, you're not going to get steroid-like results. And let's be honest, everyone who goes down this road for muscle using metformin for muscle building are going to use steroids as the benchmark. So prepare to be disappointed.
I know a lot of guys that are using gear and using metformin too, but the reason is they're borderline insulin resistant. Because right. they're eating 400 grams of carbohydrates a day. You know, there is some evidence that testosterone and superphysiological doses can make you more insulin resistant. Dr. Scott Connolly talked about that on my show maybe 10, 12 years ago. Yep. So there's a lot of guys out there who are bodybuilder types. They need metformin because their blood sugar is in the 150s, 170s all day long, all the time.
Oof.
So, you know, that's not a good thing. They technically are muscular diabetics.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it.
And all the guys that use metformin that claim that it's great are also on a lot of gear. I have a friend at the gym who says, no, metformin's great. I use it. But he's been juicing for 20 years. He's my age. He's been on gear for 20 years. He's got a lot of muscle for 20 years. You know, it's like people who go, I'm a vegan bodybuilder. No one ever asks them, when did you start bodybuilding? No, I started when I was 15. How old are you now? I'm 37. When did you go vegan? 3 years ago. So let me get this straight. You're a vegan bodybuilder now who built his body off of animal protein.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, come show me the vegan bodybuilder. And I'm sure they're out there because they just have to eat a ton more food than the average bodybuilder. But show me the vegan bodybuilder that starts out bodybuilding as a vegan. And then show me him in his 27th, 30th year of bodybuilding, you're not going to see an exceptional body. Nine out of 10 times. Maybe there's the exception to the rule. Dr. Chris Masterjohn came on my show a decade ago and said, there are some people that can do vegan. Their guts are designed to extract a lot out of plants. Most of us can't, he said. And that's from him. Dr. Chris Masterjohn is very well respected. We got some questions here. Let's get these up here. So, P. Crad Greek. The only time I would consider loading on extra carbs in a meal would be post-training. I agree with you. What do you say, Rob?
Yeah, I tell people, in fact, if they can, whatever carbs you're planning to get for the day, get most of them immediately after training.
And if you're a one-meal-a-day guy, that's what this OMAD is. If you're a one-meal-a-day guy, your post-workout meal should last an hour.
Yeah, right.
You should eat for an hour. Bear says, do you have any methods or tips to create better mind-muscle connection? What do you think, Rob?
I do. I want you to take a glass and put it over a paper, trace the outside circle, put a dot in the middle, and I want you to stare intently at that dot at night as you lay down to sleep, and I want you to count. I want you to count seconds. And when your mind wanders, stop. Start again. Say you get from, you know, you go to 10 seconds. Most people, they can't even hold 10 seconds. But the point is, by progressively going longer and longer with your focus, with that exercise, you will be able to increase your focus and concentration. Look, the world we live in today, there's cell phones, there's home phones, there's texts, there's a bazillion things. People have lost the ability to focus on one thing. And as a result, you need to practice that skill in order to get better at it. That's how you practice.
My mic was dead.
Okay.
Okay, so my opinion is, yeah, my opinion is start with lightweight. If you really want to understand what mind-muscle connection is, like the fathers of physical culture talked about, you need to be using very, very lightweight, stupid lightweight, maybe 5 pounds, like with a curl, and then supinate the wrist and feel the muscle shortening. and then just use the bicep to raise the lower arm. And you need to use lightweight. You can't make a mind-muscle connection when the body is like freaking out about how are we going to move this weight. Okay, everybody, come on, let's get busy here. There's no mind-muscle connection at all. So
my heaviest lifts in powerlifting, I don't remember a single one.
Sure, of course not. There was no time to make connections. You got to start with stupid lightweight. And I'll tell you, The Physics of Resistance Exercise by Doug Brignoli. Doug has figured out the most effective, lowest risk movements that will produce a bodybuilding physique. He's not a fan of the squat. Now, if you want to be a squatter and you want to build strength for squat, that's fine. But if you want to build a bodybuilder's physique at 61, Doug looks amazing without a risk of injury. Doug focuses on mind-muscle connection. He doesn't talk about it. But when he teaches you to stimulate your back, he just has you pull with your back. That's it.
Yes.
Just your back. It doesn't matter what your arms are doing. You don't need to be pulling with your biceps and your brachialis. And he just wants you to pull with your back. It's a short movement. But then you're activating just those, and that's the mind-muscle connection.
Yeah.
So start with lightweight. That'll help you make a mind-muscle connection. And focus on it. Focus on just the muscles you're trying to get to move the weight actually are moving the weight. And you can't do that unless you're using very lightweight. PK Rad Greek. I'm sorry. I'm sure it means something. I'm not saying it properly. So what about supplements like berberine and R-Ala? R-Ala is good. I think everybody over 40 should be taking R-Ala. Why? Because we become more and more insulin resistant as we age. And R-Ala shows clear evidence in type 2 diabetics to be able to increase insulin sensitivity. But it takes about 6 weeks, and it takes doses between 600 milligrams a day to as much as 1,600 milligrams a day. Just depends on how far down that rabbit hole you are. Break it up over a couple doses, two or three doses a day. Because it has a very short half-life, and it's great. Berberine is like metformin and is like resveratrol. It changes the microbiome. It improves blood glucose disposal. It does all the same things that metformin do, and so I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of metformin either. I'm really not.
Yeah, I would concur with most of that. I'd also tell you, though, if you're wanting to take glucose disposal agents – make sure you've got an issue with glucose disposal first,
Yeah, otherwise, hypoglycemic. You're not.
Right. You're not likely to benefit. Now, I'll add this wrinkle. The last couple times I've had blood work done, fasting blood sugars have come back a little high, which is actually normal for me, or at least historically has been normal. When I use, however, ropontacum carthamoids, both fasting blood sugars and my total cholesterol levels drop, and they drop quite a bit. So it might be compound dependent. It certainly is in the class of compounds known as ectosterones, because I have recently done that test with turkesterone, and in no small amount, a full gram a day, and I did not see any effect whatsoever on my blood sugar or my cholesterol. So, that's another compound you might want to look into.
How does it work? I know you've talked about it on the show, but does it sensitize? How does it work?
They know from studies that it results in better insulin sensitivity. It doesn't modulate how much insulin your body makes. It works on the other side of the coin. When it comes to cholesterol, there are two ectosterones in ropontacum. And you can look this up if you want. Integrostone A and B, which are responsible for its ability to lower total cholesterol. They are polyhydroxylated molecules, lots and lots of OH groups. And so those effects are notable. And I know I'm not the only one, right? I've had two or three other guys email me and say, hey, you know what? I heard you talking about that on the show, And my blood work, you know, I had blood work done when I was using it, and you're right. It's a lot lower than it was, you know, if I wasn't.
Well, now, anything that increases insulin sensitivity is gold.
Yeah. Is gold. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, beyond exercise itself and a good diet, those things are going to make a big difference. You can try to boost testosterone all day long. You're not going to get there really with anything over the counter. Insulin is the big boy. If you're looking to build a lot of muscle without, you know, the anabolic stuff, insulin is the big boy. So understand, number one, what foods to eat, but also number two, the compounds that increase your insulin sensitivity, and you're going to start getting somewhere, and not slow, fast. Fast. Look up Dr. DePasquale's anabolic diet as well to get a better understanding.
Last question, then we have to take a break and come back and do the blueprint tip of the day. Yep. How has my experience been getting raw milk online so far? My one experience of buying it online was good. The milk was delicious. I paid $12 a gallon in plastic, not in glass, which is the going rate for raw unpasteurized milk pretty much everywhere in the country. But I paid $38 to ship it from Pennsylvania to my house.
Wow.
Since then, I have a farmer close by. He's a Mennonite farmer. His name is David. In fact, he's dropping off 3 gallons today for me at a friend's house, and I'll pick it up tomorrow morning. I'm drinking a quart a day. I take 2 ball jars to work with me, and I use those as my snacks and my meals while I'm here. I'm drinking a quart a day. Elise is drinking some. She's liking it. My nephew Timmy is drinking a glass a day. We're easily going through 3 gallons a week right now, easily. So I love raw milk.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
And Robert Thompson, knees over toe guy, I like what he's talking about. It's something that I've recognized for a long time. Have not watched any of his interviews yet, but I am familiar with the concept. So there you go. All right, we're going to take I'm sorry, Rob. Rob?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You're good.
No. What, you going to say something about knees over toes guy?
Only that, you know, I would encourage you to, let's say, videotape yourself squatting with a barbell and then just regular body weight squats and watch the position that your knees are in relative to your toes. I think you'll find it pretty eye-opening.
Yeah, most people's knees go out over their toes. Most people do. All right, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we have the blueprint tip of the day. Stay tuned. Are you ready to change the way you age? Of course you are. That's why you're here. Juvicell is a new, first-of-its-kind dietary supplement that includes 10 key research-backed ingredients shown in studies to support lifespan. Things like resveratrol, fisetin, quercetin, pterostilbene, sulforaphane, turmeric, all in a single dose. You may have some of these ingredients already, but Juvicell is the first to combine them all into a single product to support your lifespan. It's vegan, non-GMO, and sustainable. Live better, longer with Juvicell. Go to SHRnetwork.biz/livebetter. Use code SHR and save 20% off today.
Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at eatlegendary.com and Amazon.
Telomere. As a listener of this show, you know how important your gut is to your overall health. Bioptimizers has a potent product to heal and repair your gut unlike anything else. It's called Leaky Gut Guardian. It's powered by patented IGY Max, an egg-based protein that enhances gut health, reverses antibiotic damage, and strengthens your immune system. Available in 2 delicious powders, vegetarian vanilla and chocolate carnivore. Simply mix it with your favorite beverage. Repair your gut and power up your immune system risk-free and save 10% off. Go to shrnetwork.biz gut.biz/leaky gut. Don't delay. Fix your gut today. The power of light can be truly life-changing and an important element for every superhuman. Because of this, I want you to experience the power of award-winning Saluma light therapy. Saluma utilizes NASA research technology to improve health at the cellular level and is cleared by the FDA to effectively treat a variety of pain, muscle and joint conditions, as well as facial wrinkles and acne. Our entire team here at Superhuman Radio uses it. Its innovative shape-taking design allows for easy placement anywhere on the body. Choose from 13 different models. For an exclusive listener discount, go to shrnetwork.biz/Seluma. That's C-E-L-L-U-M-A. And use code SHR10 to save 10% off of one of these award-winning devices.
TaylorMade Health is focused on making sure you're able to perform and look your best. They are a leader in game-changing supplements and cosmetic products. Whether you want to increase strength, expedite recovery, facilitate soft tissue repair, or reduce deep wrinkles, TaylorMade Health has you covered. TaylorMade Health is also the home to Dr. Siege products such as BPC, BPC Plus, and the Chill Pill. All of my listeners can now get 20% off their first order with code TRY20. That's TRY20. This code can even be used on subscription orders. Visit shrnetwork.biz/try20 today and use code TRY20 for 20% off your first order.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. So, Rob, what is the blueprint tip of the day?
So, the tip of the day has to do with the question, what is strength? At some point in every lifter's career, you will no doubt compare yourself to others in the strength department, the physique department, etc. And that might take the form of comparing yourself to others in your age group, to other people in your gym, other people in your chosen sport, or more prevalent today, I guess, would be online, right? On the World Wide Web. Here's a spoiler alert for you. There's always going to be someone bigger, stronger, faster, better looking, etc. than you are. So prepare yourself for that inevitable occurrence. It does beg the question, though, what is strength when you're talking about being physically strong? There are many, many different kinds. So in order to narrow your focus a bit, I'd like to go over four or five or so. On the one hand, there is absolute strength, which is typically measured best by the three classical power lifts, right? Bench press, squat, deadlift. Of those three, I feel the deadlift is likely the most indicative, if you will, of absolute strength. Powerlifting totals, by the way, I looked at them the other day. Man, what a different world. They continue to climb with no limits in sight. A 1,000-pound deadlift used to be incredibly impressive. And now we have 1,000-pound or more bench press records, right? So if you're in that game, get to work. But hang in there for the end of this because I want you to know how to gauge yourself versus others. Now, another type of strength are those power lifters, right? I know several that are 300-plus pounds. They can deadlift over 700, but they can't do a single chin-up. They certainly can't perform handstand push-ups, and they're going to struggle greatly to perform one single pistol or one-legged squat. For my money, this may be the most accurate way to compare yourself to others. And what I'm talking about is relative strength. It's usually seen in the form of calisthenics, but relative strength, as in relative to your body weight, is probably the best measure. Maximizing the genetic hand that you were dealt is inspiring stuff. I have a lot more respect and awe for the bag of bones kid who was maybe 150 pounds soaking wet, who achieves a 300-pound bench press, 400-pound squat, 500-pound deadlift, or some variation thereof, versus the guy who was born with the genetic potential to be an absolute monster, but somehow always falls short. He doesn't train hard. He doesn't train smart. He doesn't eat enough. Take your pick. There's a literal wasteland out there about people with great potential for physique development and strength, potential that's never realized. Now, we get to strongman. Just being a world-class powerlifter or calisthenics master doesn't prepare you for strongman work, because in strongman, you need to contend with things like odd object lifts. You have to have the ability to balance shifting loads overhead. Anybody that's ever tried to lift a keg of anything can certainly tell you that. And you need to have incredible stamina, you know, heart and lungs, VO2 max, whatever you want to call it, to keep up in the various different events. For example, the stone lift to various heights, you know, that takes not just a gargantuan amount of absolute strength, but balance and a first-class set of heart and lungs to lift all those stones, and then, you know, higher and higher and heavier and heavier. Or the truck pull. You know, there's a million different things that they do that play into that same dynamic. You get the picture. And then we have our friends at CrossFit. The pinnacle of ludicrous lifting, in my opinion. They keep coming up with new ways to reach, you know, muscular exhaustion, basically, while wrecking your joints in some cases. Still, that too is a different type of strength that you could measure yourself against. 10 years after trying it, though, if you last that long, I'm betting you wish you had. Everything that I just described, big, hulking powerlifters, lean, powerful, calisthenic people, and everyone in between, describes physical strength. What I haven't discussed yet is mental and emotional strength. And believe you me, they are closely related. The wrong set of life circumstances can make you physically weak. Job loss, divorce, a bad breakup, the list goes down the line. Crushing debt and financial worries, you take on any one of those or combination of thereof and watch what it does to you in the gym. Some people don't even make it to the gym. You know, they get so depressed, they're anxious, they're fearful, they just can't get it together. You know, you get under a heavy barbell in that state and you'll see exactly what I mean. Now, if I'm going to summarize things, I'll say this. If you learn only two things from this tip of the day, here they are. One, you should only compare yourself to you and your last workout. That's it. You need to be stronger than you were last workout. And number two, you need to believe this with every fiber of your being. Whatever doesn't kill me makes me stronger. And I'm going to end this with a shout out to Carrie, friend of the show, who, as we know, recently got some tough news, health-related news. One of the strongest people I've ever met. When you encounter someone like that and look at what she's up against, but at the same time, the positive attitude, the sense of grace, you know, it's a rare person that can man up or woman up, as the case may be, in the face of adverse circumstances and take care of business. And that's exactly what she's doing on a daily basis. And Carrie, for whatever it's worth, I think you are the perfect example of a strong person, both physically, mentally, and emotionally. And I really respect and admire you for it.
Natalie found the show that I did with my brother-in-law.
And oh, good.
I'm gonna email her the link today. Have you been talking to her?
Yeah, a little bit on Facebook, back and forth. I'm trying to set up a video chat, but and I'll get there. But I got to have my son help me, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, CoachRobRegish.com is the place to go.
Yep.
Go there today. Be stronger tomorrow. Thanks for today's show, Rob.
Amen. Thank you for having me.
And thanks to everybody for watching and your questions. And hope you enjoyed it. Please share the show. Help somebody else figure out some of the truths about training, nutrition, drugs, and everything else that goes along with it. And we'll see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Take care.
Thank you.